All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world, and happy Wednesday, everybody. Today's April 29th, 2026. It is going to be a big day, and we're off to a running start this morning. The top story, we've got oil prices are rising once again. WTI futures are around $103, $104 per barrel. As President Trump has signaled that the blockade of Iran may be here for quite a while. He doesn't really have any good options, right? He could resume bombing, which let's call that a bad option, right? Like, I think fewer people dying and fewer things blowing up, probably the better, all right? So his options are he could start bombing again. It wasn't popular to begin with. Poll numbers reflecting that. Okay. He could also quit. He could just walk away and say, you know what, we're done here and leave. Well, that would leave Iran an even bigger murderous monster than it was to begin with. And they would only be emboldened, and they'd probably increase the funding of terrorist proxies all over the world. And all the wonderful things the Iranians have been doing for the last 50 years or so would only get worse. So that is not a good option. And of course, the third option is to just keep the blockade in place and try to strangle them economically. And it looks like that's what he's settling on. Now, there's all kinds of articles that are going on about storage tanks are filling up. There's articles in Bloomberg this morning about how these old freighters or old crude carriers that have been basically decommissioned, they haven't sailed in years, all of a sudden they're showing up at Karg Island being used as floating storage. All the things the Iranians are doing to try to buy time to last a little bit longer to avoid shutting in wells. On the flip side of that coin, you've got domestically, consumers are under pressure, higher gasoline prices, not popular here in America. We'll see that in some of the earnings that were reported today, by the way. But also, you've got a lot of our allies are under immense pressure because of energy uncertainty, which the U.S. is trying to offset with additional exports, which are being largely subsidized by the dumping of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. So this war of economic attrition remains in place. It's going to be here for a while. At least that's the signal right now, as nobody's really seriously talking or putting any proposals on the table that the other side could live with. And so the oil price is starting to rise to reflect that reality, and it's probably going to continue for quite a while. That is, unless somebody goes on True Social and says a thing, and then the market decides to trade on that, even though they know it's all baloney. Also going on, we have got a very big day ahead. After the bell today is going to be massive. We've got four of the Mag 7 reporting after the bell today. Meta, Microsoft, Amazon, and Alphabet, Google are reporting after the bell, all within a span of like 80 seconds. So I will be drinking from the fire hose of quarterly earnings data after the bell today. That is going to move markets big one way or another. And look, guys, it's very simple. It comes down to a combination of CapEx and EPS or cloud revenue, right? We know these companies are burning a lot of money on AI data centers. Will they continue to do so? Will they increase it? Okay, the chip stocks will like it if they do that. The NVIDIAs, the AMDs, the Broadcoms, yeah, they'll love it if they increase the CapEx. But remember the last quarter, the big tech companies that increased their CapEx, they were all punished. Their stocks sold off close to 20% in the days following big tech earnings last quarter, because they're burning the money and they're not yet showing any return on that investment. So if they increase the CapEx too much, or if they don't show any return, which they still haven't done, then those stocks will sell off and that will offset any gains in the chip stock. So, you know, we're looking for signals from the hyperscalers on will this bubble continue for another 3 months. It's financial groundhog day in the AI bubble space, if you will, if they see their shadow, 3 more months of AI bubble. Also, we've got the Federal Reserve is on the docket today. This afternoon, we'll get the FOMC press conference. Now, the market is not expecting any action here. There's 100% chance they do nothing today. And really, there's a almost near certainty that they do nothing for the foreseeable future here. We'll look at what the market is predicting for Fed actions in subsequent months. I'd like to hear about the balance sheet. All right. You know, we've watched stocks rip to all-time highs despite the economy arguably being in the shambles anywhere but data center construction. Yet markets have gone on this rip-your-face-off rally throughout the month of April. while all that's been going on, we've got the backdrop of a $200 billion increase in the Federal Reserve's balance sheet since December. And remember, that was all about some liquidity event that might happen in April. Well, it's April 29th. I think we could rule out that liquidity event. So are they going to keep pumping money into the economy? And if so, why? I would like to know that. We'll see if there's any clues about that from the Federal Reserve this afternoon. Now, we got a whole bunch of earnings from various companies, all different industries today. First of all, Avis Rent-A-Car. That's a stock that ripped like 700% on a short squeeze earlier this month. That stock is down 17% this morning after losing $8 per share in their most recent quarterly earnings report. That's the thing about meme stocks, is they tend to lose money, and, well, that eventually catches up to you. Math gets a vote eventually. And interestingly enough, Pentwater Capital, one of the two hedge funds that cornered the market for Avis by somehow taking out a long position in excess of 100% of the shares outstanding in the company, yeah, they sold 4.3 million shares between $250 and $700 million. So they dumped their bags onto retail, who chased and followed them into a short squeeze. There might be a lesson in here somewhere, but damned if I could figure out what it is. Also going on this morning, Yum Brands has reported. This is interesting. Yum Brands, parent company of Taco Bell, KFC, Pizza Hut, a lot of fast food restaurants. Their earnings were okay. They had gains at Taco Bell that were driven by price cuts that were offset by weaknesses at KFC and Pizza Hut. And the takeaway from that one is the American consumer being pounded by inflation, by now higher gas prices. The people who lower their prices are seeing the sales go up. The solution to higher prices is higher prices. This is an environment where if you can lower your prices, you have to, and you'll be rewarded. And if you can't, well, look no further than Wingstop, who also just reported their earnings this morning. 9% down on the stock for Wingstop. They posted a big decline, 8.7% drop in same-store sales at Wingstop. You can see how those higher gas prices are just killing certain restaurants. The ones who adapt are being rewarded. Meanwhile, we got earnings from General Dynamics. That's a name that I own. Revenue up 10%, driven primarily by Marine Systems. And Marine Systems is the division that includes General Dynamics Electric Boat, which is building the Virginia-class and the Columbia-class submarines. War is good business. That name is doing all right this morning, although that stock was down quite a bit over the last 30 days or so. Really, we're just offsetting that recent decline this morning. Robinhood is posting big losses, down 11% on a big decline in crypto trading and also big expenses tied to the rollout and investments in Trump accounts. Oh, that's right, that government stock pump that was part of the One Big Beautiful Bill. Well, that's taking a chunk out of Robinhood this morning. That stock is down big. We've got a story about Costco, not Costco, mind you, Costco, the shipping giant, not the big retailer. Costco profit dropped by half on lower freight rates is the story. There is a lot going on in this article, a lot to unpack, a lot that I think is not being said in this article too. That one's kind of, I'm struggling to get my head around what's really going on in this article, but we're going to hash that one out in the video today. And Polymarket, we got a warning to wrap up the show. If you're even thinking about treading in that wretched hive of scum and villainy that is prediction markets, be warned. The house always wins. That's what they say of casinos, right? The house always wins. Well, you take that and then you add on the fact that they have legalized cheating, which is what prediction markets are. You are trading against people who have insider information that you don't have, which you could make the argument that, hey, the stock market is the same way, but it is to a ridiculous extent in the prediction markets. And now we've got the numbers to prove it in this article today. Stick around to the end of the show for that one. Guys, we got a lot to talk about. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this every single day. The S&P 500 right now is flat, higher by 2.9 points or 0.04%, going a whole bunch of nowhere. The Dow is positive by 29 points, about 0.05%. Again, not really going anywhere this morning. And the NASDAQ is higher, recovering a little bit from the 250-ish point loss from yesterday, currently higher by about 85 points or 0.32%. So gaining back about a third of the losses from yesterday. on that story about OpenAI missing their sales targets and having doubts about their data center build out. Again, it all depends on what happens this afternoon, guys. We'll get a little bit of a move in the market. Maybe the Fed might surprise some people and move markets during the press conference. But the big thing is what happens after the bell when we get those hyperscaler earnings. Market will live or die by those CapEx numbers. The DXY, meanwhile, is higher by 10 basis points, 98.74. Higher oil prices, probably contributing to the stronger dollar this morning. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields are a little bit higher, again, probably being driven by oil and strength in the dollar here. The 30-year yield, 4.953%, higher by almost one basis point. The 10-year yield is at 4.369, higher by a point and a half. The 10-year just keeps grinding higher back towards 4.4. The 2 years at 3.869, higher by 2.5 points. And the 1 month is down a half a point at 3.644%. All right, let's talk a little bit about the bond market and liquidity. This is the Fed's balance sheet. This is the mortgage-backed securities and treasuries held by the Federal Reserve. And you see, we were doing QT all through last year. And then in December, the QT stopped, and immediately the QE began again. Oh, but this was not QE. We're not calling it QE, right? We're calling it reserve management purchases. I think that's what they're talking about it or something. They're printing money and buying bonds with it. How much, you say? About a little less than $200 billion. We went from $6.70 trillion on the Fed's balance sheet. I'm sorry, $6.53 trillion. To 6.70. So a little less than $200 billion has been pumped into markets since December. And we wonder, why are stocks going up relentless? Maybe, just maybe, it's because they're printing money and using it to juice asset prices. And then we wonder, why is inflation going back up? Well, you know, the whole war in Iran thing, I get that too. But yeah, maybe because they're printing money. That's also going up. So I'd like to hear the Fed's reasoning. The Fed said that the reason why they did this, the reason why they went back into QE mode, was because they were worried about some liquidity event in April centered around tax day. Well, that is now behind us, so they should stop, right? Will they? We'll see what they say today. Also, just looking at the CME's Fed Watch tool, this is the likelihood of what the Fed does today. And you can see here, interest rate futures are pricing in a 100% chance that the Fed does nothing today. But the interesting thing, it'll be, what does the Fed signal about future months? Because if you look at the predictions for December right now, and again, this is all derived from interest rate futures, we've got an 88% chance that the Fed does nothing through the rest of this year. There's only about an 11% chance that they give us one interest rate cut between now and December, and there's a fraction of a percent betting on two rate cuts. So right now, the Fed is poised to do nothing and keep doing nothing. I'm more interested in what they do with the balance sheet. Looking over at Bitcoin, we're a little bit higher this morning, up by about $815, $77,137 for Bitcoin as priced on Coinbase. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got spot gold is lower by about $48 or 1%. Gold has been kind of trading inversely with oil here. Markets, you know, at least the metals market, it's been like risk off if oil higher, if oil lower, risk on. And again, I don't really like what I've been seeing in metals markets over these last few months, besides the fact that I think they took the bull market just way too fast. You had a bunch of FOMO momentum traders piled in and took that rally in 2025 a little bit too far, over-levered themselves, caused big losses at the end of January. And now we've got this, we've got historical correlations breaking down somewhat. Gold and silver were kind of trading in tandem with stocks throughout the month of March. And I just don't want to see that. It's a safe haven asset. I'd like to see it start behaving a little more like a safe haven. Spot silver, meanwhile, $72.25. Silver's been grinding lower these last couple of days. And well, the 60s are getting closer. What can I say? Down another 87 cents. 1.2%. All that being said, as a long-term store of wealth and an off-ramp from the casino, I like the shiny. Copper, meanwhile, is pretty much unchanged this morning. Platinum down by 2.4%. Palladium down by 1.1%. And there's WTI crude currently at $103.24. That's higher by $3 and change, or about 3.3% this morning. Taking a look at the WTI crude chart here, guys, you can see nice bounce off the 50-day moving average. That was about a week ago, and we have been riding higher ever since, grinding higher a couple of bucks a day. And if you look at where we're at right now at about $103, we've really only been higher than this a couple of times since this conflict began. So, you know, all the silly jawboning and deal, not a deal, you know, kind of like the tariff taco thing that was going on over the last few weeks, the market is kind of seeing through that now, and it's just settled into the longer this goes on, the higher we're going to grind prices. And we'll see if that continues here. And the reason why we've got that this morning is this one. Trump tells aides to prepare for extended blockade of Iran. And there's President Trump. Presumably, this picture was taken during the King Charles visit yesterday. Red coats in Washington, D.C. Okay, I'm sure there's some historical significance going on there, but I digress. President Trump has instructed aides to prepare for an extended blockade of Iran, U.S. officials said, targeting the regime's coffers in a high-risk bid to compel a nuclear capitulation that Tehran has long refused. In recent meetings, including a Monday discussion in the Situation Room, Trump opted to continue squeezing Iran's economy and oil exports by preventing shipping to and from its ports. He assessed that his other options, resume bombing or walk away from the conflict, carried more risk than maintaining the blockade. Yet continuing the blockade also prolongs a conflict that has driven up gas prices, hurt Trump's poll numbers, and further darkened Republicans' prospects for the midterm elections. It's very simple. It hasn't darkened Republicans' prospects for the midterms, because Republicans have no prospects for the midterms. I'm glad we clarified that. There's no point in worrying about them, because Republicans are going to get their asses kicked. I mean, epically kicked. That is a given now. So you might as well just like stop thinking about it. It's time to look past the midterms, guys. It has also caused the lowest number of transits through the Strait of Hormuz since the war began. Since ending the major bombing campaign in an April 7th ceasefire, Trump has repeatedly walked back from escalating the conflict, opening space for diplomacy after earlier threatening to destroy the entirety of Iranian civilization. But he still wants to tighten the grip on the regime until it caves to his key demand, dismantling all of Iran's nuclear work. On Monday, Trump told aides that Iran's three-step offer to reopen the Strait of Hormuz and save nuclear talks for the final phase proved Tehran wasn't negotiating in good faith, the Wall Street Journal reported. So, you know, it looks like just get comfy. You know, if you're one of the Marines on one of these boats, I don't know. Hopefully they have plenty of crayons to eat out there, because they're going nowhere fast. Looks like we're settling in for the blockade, and this war of economic attrition will continue. And meanwhile, we've got Avis budget's worse than expected loss extends stock sell-off. Luckily, none of my guys ran into this one, right? Right, guys? Yeah, this took a very predictable path. Avis Budget Group, one of the market's most volatile stocks in recent weeks, reported a worse than expected loss for the first quarter, the morning after a major investor revealed it sold a portion of its stake, sending the shares tumbling yet again. The car company lost $8.01 a share during the period, according to a statement. Wednesday, analysts expected a loss of $6.87 on average in estimates compiled by Bloomberg. So a much bigger loss. It doesn't matter. You know, eventually, guys, memes and the trading frenzy wears off and you're left with a company that has an earnings, and the value will be determined based on those earnings. And Avis is a dead business model. This company does not make money. They lose it hand over fist. The heavily shorted shares fell 17% as of 7:28 a.m. before regular trading in New York, putting them on pace for the sixth straight daily decline. The stock has been on a wild ride over roughly the past 6 weeks, soaring more than 600%, driven by a short squeeze before crashing in recent days. In a two-day span last week, Avis lost about 70% of its value. Why? Because the hedge funds that convinced everybody to pile into the stock were dumping into the rally. That's why. One of Avis's largest shareholders, Pentwater Capital Management, sold 4.3 million shares recently at prices that range between $250 and $700, according to regulatory filings. The hedge fund is now the second largest holder with a 17.5% of the stock. which means if you were retail and you were buying between 250 and 700, if you were buying on this ramp, you were selling to the hedge fund that convinced you to buy it. And then the hedge fund stopped buying and bam, the stock sells off and down now 18.5% ahead of the opening bell, $148.50, still up about 48% from where it was before the squeeze began, but at the rate this thing is bleeding out, we'll be back to those levels in just a couple of days here. No FOMO, guys. No FOMO. All right. Meanwhile, we've got a little bit of commentary on the state of the U.S. consumer. And as you may have already guessed, higher gasoline prices are hurting them. Yum beats estimates as Taco Bell offsets tepid KFC and Pizza Hut. Yum brand sales beat expectations thanks to Taco Bell's value meal and plethora of new menu items offsetting more tepid results in its other brands. Same-store sales at Taco Smell rose 8%, the company said in a statement on Wednesday, the fastest pace in a year and ahead of analyst expectations for 5%. Meanwhile, KFC grew by 2%, which is just not even keeping up with inflation, slightly below estimates, while Pizza Hut was flat, highlighting those brands' ongoing weakness. All right, so Taco Bell doing well. They lowered prices. Same-store sales rise. KFC kind of treading water. Pizza Hut flat, which means they're losing ground in an inflationary environment. And also keep in mind, Domino's Pizza, remember their earnings a couple days ago. They got clobbered on disappointing earnings. People are not ordering pizza. And, well, it is taking a chunk out of their stocks here. Yum earnings per share, excluding some items, were $1.50, beating the average estimate. First quarter results underscore the need for restaurants to balance affordability and novelty to bring economically pressured diners in the door. And that last sentence sums that one up pretty well. Yum brand stock is up about 1% here, $158.02. Could have been a lot worse. Could have been a lot worse. And if you think I'm kidding, take a look at what's going on at Wingstop this morning. And another restaurant, another case of they're just having a hard time getting people in the door because the consumers are in bad shape. Wingstop sinks as fewer diners feasted on fast food chicken. Wingstop shares fell after the company lowered its full-year guidance and reported worse than expected results, confirming concerns that traffic to the chicken chain had significantly dropped off. The restaurant chain now expects fiscal 2026 domestic same-store sales to shrink by low single digits, down from flat to low single digits in its previous forecast. Analysts polled by Bloomberg had expected a 0.4% contraction this year after cutting their forecast from about 1.3% in mid-February. First quarter domestic same-store sales fell 8.7%, further than the 5.4% expected by the street. That is just terrible. That is a restaurant that is not going to make it. Adjusted earnings per share of $1.18 beat estimates as expenses were less than projected, including the cost of chicken wings. But look at this stock getting clobbered here, down just about 11%, $154 a share for Wingstop, down by $19 this morning. Stock is already down 27.5% year to date and about 23% over the last year or so. Things not going well in the restaurant space these days. Meanwhile, General Dynamics sales gain on Marine Systems growth. Revenue in the first quarter rose by 10% to $13.48 billion, exceeding forecasts. General Dynamics recorded higher revenue in the first quarter, boosted by a jump in Marine Systems sales. Marine Systems sales, when you see that, that's basically building submarines, which General Dynamics is building a lot of them. The defense company on Wednesday posted a profit of $1.13 billion, or $4.10 a share. That's compared with $944 million or $3.66 a share a year earlier. Analysts were expecting $3.70 a share, so it's a big beat for General Dynamics. Revenue rose 10% from a year earlier. Sales in Marine Systems increased the most, rising 21% to $4.34 billion. Aerospace revenue increased 8.4%, while Combat Systems and Technologies increased 4.9% and 4.2% respectively. A lot of military spending, defense contractors doing pretty well. General Dynamics stock up 7.1% ahead of the opening bell, trading at $336. Although if you look at this one year to date, this one had a pretty rough April while the rest of the market was rallying. General Dynamics was selling off. So we're basically gaining back everything we lost in April. But still, over the last year or so, this one is up 15.3%. And full disclosure, I own shares in General Dynamics. And we got a couple more here. First of all, Robinhood getting clobbered this morning. Robinhood stock slumps as Q1 earnings miss analyst estimates amid 2026 crypto slump. Now, it's interesting because a lot of the banks did really well on the volatility in the last market. They made a lot of fees on a lot of trading. So you'd think Robinhood, the big retail name, would do well in that environment, but they didn't because the crypto market is doing so poorly. Robinhood stock slid around 10% in pre-market trading on Wednesday as the company said its Q1 profit and revenue fell short of estimates. The financial app provider said on Tuesday that profits rose 3% from the prior year to $346 million, or 38 cents a share, while net revenue rose 15%. But the market was expecting much better than that, $382 million, or 42 cents a share on revenue of $1.14 billion. So it was a big miss for Robinhood here. A big source of revenue for Robinhood, fees from crypto trades, fell 47% from the first quarter of last year, driven by a slump across the digital asset world that kicked off late last year and worsened through early February. The figure was slightly lighter than analysts had expected. So crypto winner taking a big chunk out of Robinhood here. That's not too surprising. Also noteworthy, Robinhood reported an 18% rise in expenses on Tuesday, also disclosing it plans to invest another $100 million in building the Trump Accounts app. However, the firm added that it ultimately expects revenues to exceed costs from that endeavor. So I don't think the market liked that $100 million investment in Trump Accounts either. Robinhood stock getting clobbered this morning, down 12%, $72.14-ish per share, down almost 10 bucks. All right, got to talk about this one too. Costco's profit drops by half as lower freight rates bite. There's a lot going on in this article. First, I want to just drive home Costco, right? Not Costco. This is not the warehouse club. This is the shipping giant. Costco Shipping reported a 50% drop in first quarter profit on weaker freight rates, warning that the war in the Middle East has posed significant challenges for the industry. All right, a 50% drop in profit, that is not insignificant. That is huge. Net income fell to 5.9 billion yuan, this is a Chinese company, or 863 million, down from 11.7 billion yuan a year earlier. That's according to the filing on Wednesday. Revenue dipped 11% to 51.8 billion yuan, with the Trans-Pacific route seeing the biggest growth decline. All right, the Trans-Pacific route seeing the biggest growth decline. That would suggest that it's container ships from China to the U.S. that's driving this. Now, they go on to talk a lot about how the conflict in the Middle East has posed significant challenges to safety and stability of global shipping. Okay, sure, that's certainly not helping things. They're talking about resuming new bookings for containers going into the UAE in Saudi Arabia, so maybe some disruption going on here in the Middle East. But there's a couple things we got to think about with this. The first thing, profit down 50%. That's versus a year ago. Keep in mind where we were a year ago. A year ago, this is the first quarter, so before Liberation Day last year, when everybody was trying to bring in as much freight as possible before the tariffs went into effect. And so we had that big drop in first quarter GDP last year from the big trade deficit. Everybody bought that inventory in. So right away, it's hard to tell what's going on here because you're up against such difficult comps. All right. That being said, you've also got the factor that's very hard to quantify. How much is the war in the Middle East affecting this? Well, the company's saying it's that Trans-Pacific route that's really what's hurting them. Well, shipping from China to the U.S., all that cheap plastic crap coming in from China, that does not traverse the Strait of Hormuz. So that's probably not driving that either. Maybe there's a little bit of trade war tensions in here. Maybe tariff uncertainty. I honestly couldn't point to any one thing and say this is what's happening. I do know that there's a lot of different variables in this equation, not the least of which is very difficult comps from that first quarter a year ago. But keep an eye on this one. I don't really know what to make of this. We're seeing a lot about freight on the road is getting more expensive here in the States. That would suggest more things are moving around. But at the same time, we've got that crackdown on non-dom truck drivers. So there's capacity curtailment. I don't know. Might be time to talk to Craig Fuller again, see what's going on with this one. But I was scratching my head on this story this morning. Let me know in the comments what you think is going on with Costco here. And last but not least, if you're thinking about playing on Polymarket or Kalshi, just don't. Just don't, guys. It is a mechanism of wealth extraction. That's all it is. And if you're there, you're a mark. Most traders lose on Polymarket, and winners look like bots. Most profits made by a tiny number of accounts. Not really surprising here, but we've got some data to back it up now. Prediction markets are being touted on social media as a lucrative side hustle for young Americans squeezed by rent and student loan bills. But in reality, most traders are losing money, and a significant amount in many cases. Over 100,000 accounts lost at least $1,000 on Polymarket, one of the largest prediction markets, according to a Bloomberg News analysis, of every wallet active since the beginning of 2025. That is almost twice the number that made at least that much. All right, so it's kind of a weird metric. 100,000 people lost at least $1,000, and only half as many people made at least $1,000. All right, that tells me that the losses are widely distributed and the gains are highly concentrated. All right, which means the game is rigged. You should know that. And then this chart shows it. Big wins are concentrated among fewer users, but just about everybody is losing here. More than 100,000 wallets lost at least $1,000. Among the winners, a majority of the profits were raked in by a tiny slice of what looked to be automated bots. Everyone else in aggregate lost $131 million. If you're even thinking about messing around on these things, guys, don't. And look, okay, maybe there's some guy in the comments is probably going to be like, I made money doing this, blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's fine. Congratulations, you did well. All right, just like I'm sure there's some guy who went into a casino one day and made big. But the reason why those casinos make so much money is because most people who go in the door lose. And that is infinitely worse on Polymarket. Look, we just had a story not too long ago about a master sergeant in the Army who was part of the Maduro raid who made $411,000 betting on the Maduro raid. I mean, it's Pete Rose with an AR. Just don't, guys. Just don't. Be careful out there. It's a golden age of fraud. Hey, big afternoon coming up, guys. We'll have a lot to talk about tomorrow morning after we digest those big tech earnings and that Fed press conference. But for now, don't forget that like button and that subscribe button. Thank you very much for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Thank you also to my magnanimous Melonheads on Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee for supporting the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.